Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Yes, in all of us, to varying degrees, there's a little bit of the glass half empty person, or we might be the glass half full type. Last week, we kicked off a new series of conversations with our Open House human condition guru, clinical psychologist Lynn Worsley, about the differences between people who are optimists and pessimists. It was very revealing and well worth catching on the podcast page of our brand new website, openhousecommunity.com.au. Lynn, welcome back. Tonight we're going to be focusing in on the pessimists and how we deal with them, okay?
Yeah.
Give us a quick sketch of where you took us last week about the differences in thinking between those pessimists but also the optimists.
Okay. Look, the researchers looked at the differences in thinking that were found between the three key features of pessimists' reactions to negative events. And I'll make it a little bit easier to have a look at the pessimists, to actually think about what would happen, how they would infer what would happen if something bad happens.
Yes.
So the pessimists would say that if something bad happened, it was a permanent thing.
Yeah.
And they'd use words like always and never and can't that imply that what's happening is just going to stay like it is.
Their phrase would be, that'd be right.
Yeah, that'd
always
be right.
Like this.
That's right.
Okay.
And so the simple things they'd say, you know, like if they couldn't find a parking spot, and we used that example last week, they'd say that they could never find a parking spot, or it always happens like this, or they would conclude that they can't get a parking spot and so they may not go. Or they might say that the bad thing, it's fixed, you know, it's unchangeable.
Yes.
You can't do anything about it. Yep. And when you have this way of thinking, you're then reluctant to challenge it because basically it'll never change. So why bother?
Yeah. But what happens if something good does happen to the pessimist? Because sometimes it might.
That's right. But that's really interesting because the pessimist would say that the good thing is only temporary and it won't last long.
Yes.
So they'll go back to being bad soon. So we may as well just wait for the bad thing to happen. Mm. So if they got a parking spot once, they'd say, oh, well, that was just a one-off, or it was lucky, or it was unusual. And the usual is that there's no parking spots.
Yes. So you mentioned the research. What are the other ways of thinking that the researchers have noticed? Because there's been a lot of work that's gone into this.
Yes, yes. And the pessimists would also say that if something bad happens, it was global. So they would use, like, you know, the examples, they'd find one small thing that indicates something's going bad, and then they'll say everything's going bad.
Mm.
So they'll generalize comments like everyone or everything is going wrong. And because this one thing indicates that things are going bad, it must be so. It's also what we see with people who are depressed or highly anxious, and they do what you call catastrophize.
Okay.
So one small thing that doesn't look right goes to catastrophic proportions and becomes bigger than you can imagine.
Sounds like some people I know in the news business.
I think that's actually how they make the news.
Yes.
They look for the catastrophes.
Yeah.
But look, here's an example. Let's say a man, he notices that he's got a sore rib after a football game.
Yep.
He goes to the bathroom and he looks at his rib and he pushes it a bit and takes a deep breath. He notices that it hurts when he takes the breath, and then he starts to think. And let's say he's a pessimist.
Okay.
He goes, maybe it's my lungs. Maybe I've got something on my lungs. Or what if it isn't from the football game? And what if it's in my lungs after all? And then he starts to think about his family and his friends and the money that he needs to earn to support everyone and how he can't die if he has to work. And then he thinks about his death and his funeral and his wife remarrying and his kids and how they would cope. And he starts to notice that his breathing is becoming quite rapid and that his heart's beating fast.
Because of the way he's catastrophizing.
That's right. And then he also starts to fear that something else is going to happen to him, and he starts thinking, oh, it is lung cancer because I've got this fast heartbeat and my lungs are going so fast. It must be lung cancer, and maybe it's even spreading. And it keeps going. The thinking goes on and on.
Yes.
And it continues to affect his interaction with people. And this is what becomes really quite interesting, because as a result of his thinking, he avoids the party that's planned for that night. He doesn't want to talk to his wife, and the kids wonder why he's so grumpy, so they avoid him. So to make things even worse, because he doesn't interact with other people, he doesn't get information from them to refute the thoughts.
He's in his own little catastrophizing world.
That's right. So no one challenges this globalized catastrophic thinking because He sticks to himself and his own thoughts dominate. So as you can see, the pessimist looks for the smallest evidence in order to make their generalized judgments in the negative direction.
Yes.
They then have a reaction or a behavior which blocks other evidence from challenging their conclusion.
So to a lot of people, that might sound so extreme it's unbelievable, but you would have seen people to this degree.
Now,
I mean, there's always shades of it.
That's right, and I'm just giving you an extreme example, but even in a smaller example, most of us would have that sort of behaviour from time to time.
I've been known to do that a bit. Yes. So how do you argue or help even work out with someone who is so pessimistic? How do you deal with this?
Now, what we use in therapy, we use cognitive behaviour therapy, and I've said this a few times, CBT, and it's one of the most used therapy of the time that we are in at the moment. And we do what we call thought refuting, and we gather evidence of the opposite to what your brain is telling you. So basically, it's pretty hard to work with the pessimist, and usually the pessimist will block your responses and have a pretty argument for you as soon as you start giving them something else. So this, and also their thinking can become quite contagious, and you can walk away feeling quite defeated and hopeless yourself after having a conversation with the pessimist.
Sure.
You might also start to find yourself avoiding them yourself because you feel bad.
Mm.
And I think it's one of the reasons why people who have depression or anxiety often make the remark that no one seems to want to help them. They don't realize that the actual thinking pattern that they have changes the dynamics of the people around them to support the pessimistic thinking.
Yes. So they're often unknowingly and unwittingly repelling people around them.
That's exactly right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how do we help them? Is it possible to?
Well, it's really important to challenge.
Is it? Okay.
But if you challenge too hard, you can reinforce the negative and make them even more stuck.
Oh, dear.
So I think the best way to challenge is simply in the language that we use. So if someone comes in with a small thing that's really going, that they say is really going bad, and it's an indication of everything going bad, like they use a global comment like that, you simply restate their argument. For example, the man with the sore ribs might say, "So you've got sore ribs after a football game. Now you think you're going to die. How did your brain make that jump?"
Mm.
So that's an implication that makes him start thinking, oh, it is a jump. Oh, doesn't your brain do that? So there's a question. Whereas if you say, "Oh, don't be stupid," that's not going to go anywhere.
Some pessimists might be saying, "What are you saying about my brain?"
Yeah, maybe.
So it might be a challenging challenge.
Yeah. So, or another way you could say is, to reflect to the guy, you know, your body is sore after football. You must have run really hard today. And this makes us a specific reason for being sore rather than a global reason for being sore.
Yes, yep.
And when you can make it specific, it's changeable. Oh, okay, maybe I shouldn't run so hard at the next football game.
Mm.
Or you might say, you must have sore ribs because you took so many catches today.
Aren't you a great player?
Yeah, yes. This must be a specific reason, again, for the sore ribs. So, again, it gives them, oh, yeah, I did take a lot of catches. So that's evidence that actually supports the specific reason why I have that sore ribs.
And you mentioned that there were three patterns of thinking that you observe with a pessimist. What's the third?
Yeah, when a pessimist notices that something's gone wrong, they also will automatically blame themselves or assume that this is only happening to them. So it's about me. So, for example, they say that the reason for the price check in the aisle at the supermarket was because they were in that particular aisle. Or they might think that the reason the traffic is so slow is because they were there.
Yes.
Or they might see other people and think that they've got everything perfect and bad things only happen to them. So they may not say this, but underlying their thinking is just all about me. They might say this always happens to me.
Yeah.
Now, I was at a netball game once, and the woman who was managing the team had a particularly pessimistic style of thinking, and I thought this was really interesting.
Sure, that was great for the team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She went to the bathroom once, and during the second half of the game, she went to the bathroom, and while she was away, the team scored two goals. Now, when she returned, she said, "Every time I manage a team, it goes really bad, and it's just typical that when I'm not there that they score the goals."
Classic. This is just what you're saying.
Yes. So it's all about me.
Yes.
Okay. She clearly thought that it was about her. And if anything went wrong, it was her fault. But on top of that, if it went well, It had nothing to do with that. So the tragedy of this thinking is that it actually perpetuates more pessimistic relationships.
Yes.
So the person who thinks that everything is going wrong because of them will also avoid taking any responsibility for anything and perhaps even blame other people for the misfortune, because underneath they actually blame themselves and they don't want other people to know that it's actually all their fault.
Mm.
So that whole blame and shame is often based in that I'm worried that it's my fault.
Yeah.
So trying to diffuse it.
And again, they're busy repelling. Like in a team that's just scored two goals, she's still got a whinge.
Yeah.
Repelling people around you. So can I ask us, how do you argue with a person who's avoiding blaming themselves by blaming others or continually saying that it's all their fault?
Well, it's really hard.
I bet.
The arguments are incredibly difficult, and you can get caught up in supporting the person with their own blame. So you might bring up that they haven't brought the washing in or they haven't cooked dinner this week, and their response is, oh, I'm so bad, I'm the one that causes all the problems, or it's all my fault.
Mm.
And so you then it pushes you to have a sort of a futile argument with them and say, oh, no, you're not that bad, and you're not the cause of the problem. I'm sorry I made you feel that way. So instead of the response that they need, which is, well, actually just the washing needs to come in.
Yes.
It's actually not your fault. It's just the washing. And there's no blame here. It's just a job that needs to get done.
Yep.
So moving the shame and blame away from the discussion means you can center around just the task. So that's a good way to work with. Just look at the task and forget about blaming it. If someone has guilt, it really diffuses things and you just don't go anywhere.
Mm.
So it's actually quite good to say it doesn't matter whose fault it is.
Like, yes.
You know, what matters is how they scored some goals, and yeah, what we need to do is to see how they scored the goals. Sometimes being quite harsh and saying, you know, it's actually not about you is quite helpful. But a word of warning.
Yes. Just before the warning, you seem to be tougher than I'd imagine I could get away with in front of a pessimist. Because I'd be hesitant.
Yes. And I think probably that's the pessimist evokes that in us to be hesitant so that we don't challenge them.
Yeah. Okay. So it's possible.
Yes.
Probably necessary sometimes.
But a word of warning.
Yes. What's your warning?
If you notice the person that you're working with or you're living with or you have around you who's really pessimistic is particularly hard to shift, it might be that they actually have depression.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And a clinical depression, the indication of that is that their thinking is so rigid you can't even get a shift. And that's when they need some medication.
Yes.
One of the things I look for in people who are incredibly depressed is their ability to shift their thinking in the hour that I see them.
Okay.
And if I can see they can shift their thinking in some way, I know that they're able to do stuff about their thought processes. But if I can't see that they shift, I then might say, well, I think it might be helpful just to have some meds to bring you up to a zone where you can shift.
I'd like to talk in our future conversations on this, the process that you go through in that hour. I think that would be a revealing kind of thing. But the important thing to say is, A, people can change.
Yes.
And also therapy involves just working with the thinking patterns. Or is there more to it than that?
There's many layers of therapy.
Yeah.
And working with a pessimist involves a lot of teaching and training and practicing and learning new techniques.
Yes.
Martin Seligman, and I think I've said this before, Martin Seligman, who is the leader of our field in positive psychology, says he is an eternal pessimist. And every morning he sits on the edge of his bed and he coaches himself to think optimistically.
Mm.
Now, if he's got it,
yeah,
we can do it.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's where, you know, it's really quite a challenge. We don't start saying, oh, you know, I'm going to feel better and therefore I'm going to think better. We actually start looking at how we can challenge the thoughts to shift so we can then feel a bit differently and change how we interact with other people, which then gives us experiences that challenge again our thoughts.
We've had so many great conversations over the last nearly 2 years. I think this is a great one. What are we going through? Where are we heading next week, Lynn?
Well, Lee, I'd like
Why am
to
I
practice
nervous
on
nervous when we say, well, Lee? All right, practice on me. So this is off air, I take it.
I know. I just think that we might just see if you're brave enough go through some practice techniques.
Okay.
So I was thinking of going through...
Assuming I'm a pessimist.
So maybe we can practice being pessimistic and then getting you to shift.
Okay, yeah.
So
well, that's the
I think
thing.
That would be quite interesting.
So I was going to say, oh, I look forward to that. Well, we'll see. Thank you so much. You're so good. The Worsley Wisdom. We'll see you next week.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.